Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Gals of Geekdom podcast, the show where I don't like anything, according to our viewers. I'm joined, of course, by our lovely... I'm Jazzy Oliver, and I'm joined, of course, by our lovely... by my usual band of lovely co-hosts, Crystal Williams and Lizzie Lemondrop.
Hello!
Hello, fans.
I do not have a cold, and so, therefore, my voice is not scratchy, and no one needs to comment on it.
And joining us today is a good friend of mine. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Kai Jordan. I am a voice actor, video essayist, aspiring artist, and yeah, if you've watched the Pokemon Twilight Wings web series, you may recognize me as the man who provided the voice for Leon in that same thing, the Pokemon champ who gets lost all the time and all that stuff. So, yeah, there's that.
Is that, like, the title on your business card? Is that, I play the Pokemon champ who gets lost all the time?
I wish it was. I missed that opportunity. That would have been a great thing. Because it's so true to life, though, because my driving navigation is ass without a GPS. So, I get lost. Like, literally, like, I'd be fucked without an iPhone or anything like that. I wouldn't know where to go.
You know what? For my business card, I'm going to have it that I'm the trans lesbian who voices in Yowie, because that seems to be a thing now.
No, but Sam, I have zero direction. I can't get any. I will put on Google Maps to get somewhere that I have been my entire life.
Yeah.
I will put on Google Maps to go drive 10 minutes away because I'm not convinced I will not get lost.
Yeah, same.
Same. I don't know street names very well.
I'm just sitting here like, I take buses. I'm not familiar with this driving you guys speak of.
Oh, I love that. I love living in San Francisco and not needing to drive anywhere. I took a bus everywhere. And if I really needed a car for something, I either had a friend who had one, which was one saw. Shout out to Count Jakula, who was the one person I knew in that city with a car if we really needed to drive. Or you call an Uber. Like, I didn't need to drive shit. I didn't need a car in that city at all. It was great.
And speaking of cars, you know what? This is a good segue.
Oh, great. All right, let's jump into this.
Speaking of cars, we did a poll last week, and you guys all voted, and I guess you guys really fucking like me because you guys didn't vote for me to watch Twilight. Some of you did, and I'm very disappointed, but...
We will be getting to Twilight later in this podcast, all of you rest assured.
Just watch it. You guys aren't even going to put up a poll. Like, after I'm done with Fast and the Furious, you're going to go, oh, that was great, Jazzy, now fucking watch Twilight. That's your job now.
Watch Twilight.
So, yeah, as per the poll, I am watching each week and reporting on Gals my experiences watching the Fast and Furious films. Or is it called the Fast and the Furious films? I don't fucking know.
It's called the Fast Saga.
Fast Saga, that's good. I can go with that. But yes, I went all out. If you follow my Twitter, you saw I went all out for this. I bought the Blu-ray set, and which contained the main eight films that are currently out, as well as getting Hobbs and Shaw for when we get to that. And by the way, yes, folks, if Twilight did win, I would have given it the same level of going all out.
Oh, no.
Run. Run. I am dangerous.
Anyway. I'm sure you get the Blu-rays of Twilight, Jet.
They have Blu-ray sets of the Twilight Saga at the Target I work at. That's how I got the
Of course they do. I'm sure I have somewhere... A Blu-ray of Breaking Dawn, Part 1 and 2. That was a gift, a Christmas present to me in 2012. So I absolutely have somewhere.
So, yeah, for this week, I watched the first movie, The Fast and the Furious. And let me just tell you, because I was confused which between the first movie and the fourth movie was the actual fourth one, because the fourth movie has the worst fucking title ever, which I'll bitch about more when we get to it. The reason I got a set is because I wanted to make double sure I was watching the first movie first.
And it's probably for the best, because, yeah, I totally understand what you mean. Fast and Furious versus the Fast and the Furious, yes.
Because I could have potentially watched a movie where I had no idea where anyone was, and I was going through the entire fucking movie clueless. Well, joke's on me, because twist, I still went through a movie where I didn't know through who anyone was, and I was fucking clueless.
That's the thing about the series. I feel like They each movie has like three or four titles that they're officially using in different ways and different times. Like,
yeah, it's so weird.
Like, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head what, you know, like, had what the newest one, what the ninth film is officially called. Is it Fast 9, the Fast Saga? I've seen that. But is it, like, Fast and Furious 9, or is it Furious 9?
I think it's called F9.
Or it's F9, right?
Yeah, I think that's what it's called. It's called F9, which is such a weird fucking title, but anyway.
I guess they were working on a PC
before. It's because they were running out of puns.
But yeah, so I watched the first movie, and I have to say, it is a movie that I am very indifferent to. I think I had fun, but at the same time, I was kind of bored through some scenes.
I don't know, am I the only one else who's seen all the films? Kai, have you seen Fast and Furious franchise?
No, I have not seen a single one. The only Fast and Furious thing I've ever experienced was the studio tour thing.
That was fun, yeah.
Yeah, that's the only thing I've ever experienced that was Fast related.
Okay, so Jazzy and I are the only two on here, I'm assuming, who've seen the Fast and the Furious.
So. I don't know, Lizzie, have you, or...
I have seen, as I said before, Fast 5 and Hobbs and Shaw. That's it.
Okay, so, but yeah, for the first Fast and the Furious film, it was kind of this weird experience because you can tell this was a movie made in 2001 because there's something about the editing and soundtrack choices that I was like, yes, this is an early 2000s movie. I can tell right off the fucking bat.
It's very much steeped in the culture of the early 2000s. And I'd say you're going to notice that even more when you get to the second and third film. But I'm not going to tell you about that because I want you to experience it. But I will say that, yes, it is very much of the time. And I think I'm with you in that the original film is kind of a boring movie in between certain race spots, and of course the chemistry between Paul Walker and Vin Diesel, which is actually very good.
That was like the biggest shining point in that movie for me, aside from the big car chase scenes, is that Paul Walker and Vin Diesel have legitimately good chemistry, and I enjoy a lot of the scenes with the two of them. They were easily the most enjoyable bits of the movie. Unfortunately, it's not a very well-made movie as a whole. Like, I thought it was poorly shot. I thought the editing gave me a headache. Any character with a vagina is more or less sexualized throughout the whole thing to an uncomfortable degree.
Yeah, they didn't understand how to address women properly back then.
I will say future entries are much better at it.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, my understanding is that, like, as there were more women in the cast, and, like, the main cast, it definitely got better. Question, wait. Is Linda Cardellini in the first one?
No.
When does Linda Cardellini show up? That's, like, my only motivation to watch more of these movies, is that I know Linda Cardellini is in it.
I didn't even know Linda Cardellini comes up in one, and now I'm excited.
This is the first I've heard of this.
Wait, I'm forgetting which one it was. Honestly, because I love these movies, but it's been a while since I've seen certain entries, you know?
Let me look it up. What movie is, what Fast and Furious movie is Linda Cardellini?
Which one is where Wendy and Dipper Pines cross over into the series? Uh-huh. When does that happen?
Oh God!
Oh, I forget that's Linda Cardellini Ozyme, but it makes me so happy.
Oh, I don't see it in her filmography. She's not. I got my hopes up.
I don't think she's in the series.
Who am I thinking of?
Gal Gadot? Is that who you're thinking of?
Gal Gadot's in it. Yes.
Yeah, Gal Gadot is. I know she was. I know she's in one or
and
two.
And Charlize Theron. And yeah. Helen Mirren.
These are the people I'm thinking of. Hang on.
So while you're thinking about that, I'll say this, though, about the first Fast and Furious film. I really liked the third act. I thought it was where the most interesting shit happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, so there's a bit, and I'm going to go into a bit of a spoiler, but, like, so the main point of the movie is, of course, that Paul Walker is an undercover cop, and he's, like, trying to get close to Vin Diesel's character and see, hey, buddy, you doing anything illegal? And yes, Vin Diesel is doing plenty of illegal shit.
Yep.
But, like, there's a point in the movie, and you know there's going to be a point where Walker's revealed to be the undercover cop. It's just how this movie is structured. You know it's going to happen, and that's when shit's going to hit the fan. And the moment they do it is so fucking cool and kind of a badass power move. Where basically, so Paul Walker near the end of this movie is kind of like saying, you know what, fuck the police. I'm going to help these guys, which is awesome. And the best way this movie could have gone. So I'm happy it did. But then there's a bit where one of Vin Diesel's dudes.
Okay,
like, gets...
hang on. I figured it out. I figured it out. It's because Linda Cardellini was Hawkeye's wife.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. And my brain combined Fast and the Furious with that one Bourne movie that had Jeremy Renner.
And then
three different movies were combined in my lizard brain.
So yeah, that's why you're
mixing up your franchises there.
Intensely.
We cracked the code.
Boys, yeah.
So, back to the thing. So, basically one of Vin Diesel's dudes gets wounded. They need to get him to a fucking hospital, but they're in the middle of nowhere. He's gonna die. So in a moment that made me audibly yell, oh shit, Paul Walker takes his phone and goes, this is Officer O'Brien. I need an emergency transport here now. And that was like the biggest, oh fuck, moment for me. So I'll give the movie that. I liked how they did that, and I liked the standoff he and Vin Diesel had near the end, because Vin Diesel does fucking incredible in this scene.
I was saying this on Twitter, but I actually wanted to reiterate on the show is that I genuinely think Vin Diesel is a very good actor when he's passionate about a project and he has a director and a group of people he can easily work with.
Oh, absolutely. Like, yeah. It's easy to joke about any sort of wrestling actor. And it's also easy to joke about I Am Groot and stuff. But Vin Diesel's performance is legitimately so good because he didn't just go in and record I Am Groot like three times. Like, Vin Diesel committed to that.
Didn't he also record it in like almost every language?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's incredible.
He got the rough idea of what the character is supposed to be saying, and he delivers it like that. Like, he committed to playing that part, and it's so good. And I think that it's an underrated skill in an actor to do something like that.
I knew he could do that because when he was announced for that character, because like one of my favorite movies of all time is The Iron Giant, and he plays the Iron Giant. So and very
incredible.
Like he starts out speaking like nonsense and like gibberish and stuff like that because he's still learning to talk, but then like he fully develops his speech as it goes on, and it's just like he creates this very endearing and very likable sounding character. He's super great. So when he flies up into the sky and being like Superman, it's like, oh, it's great.
Make me tear up thinking about the Iron Giant.
Oh, yeah.
It's beautiful. It's a great movie on Blu-ray. Get it.
So
yes,
but yeah, I would say Vin Diesel was very good in this movie as well, despite the fact that I don't think the script gave him the best material. And yeah, I think the biggest problem with the first Fast and Furious is that it just has a lot of age to show. Again, all the women are not characters. They are objects, except maybe Michelle Rodriguez, who's kind of a badass. But even then, it feels like a token badass, honestly.
Well, yeah, it feels like we got to have a woman. There needs to be a girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very much a product of its time.
Also, there was a bit early in the movie where someone dropped the F slur, which fucking, like, the look on my face when that popped up, I was like, what the fuck?
I've made jokes about this before, but there's something weird about, and I usually will make this point specifically about 2000s era horror, But I think it's just a thing about in comedies and most films of that era too. There's something strange about the 2000s. We're really obsessed with the F slur, and I don't really get why. And I've had, and like, again, I bring this up specifically a lot of the time when I talk about like Eli Roth era horror films, and people will be like, well, you know, that's always been a thing. I'm like, yeah, but the way movies in like the 70s, the 80s, the 90s would use that word came with a casualness that you got the sense that people didn't process it as I am saying a slur.
Yeah.
Whereas when you have characters, the way characters say it in 2000s films always feels this very strange edgelord frat boy thing where you're they've got characters saying it because they know that it makes them a shitty person.
Yeah,
and that's supposed to be amusing in itself, and it's a weirdly performative overuse of that specific word that I find strange in that period of time.
And also, just to add to that, we were talking about this in a previous Discord call before this podcast started, but the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory remake, there's a scene when Mike TV is introduced. They just casually just like when he's going on about how he like kills characters over and over again, he's like, I do this and that and this and that or whatever. And then he just Mike just casually drops the R slur, like just like, oh, I forgot that they said that. Oh.
And yeah, I forgot until you mentioned it to me. I was like, oh, God, they did.
Yeah.
And that's true of that word, too. It's true of that word, too.
Yeah, and they
can't watch a single Eli Roth movie without the R slur and the F slur, just like every other fucking line.
And a lot of the bull, and I just remember this too. A game I used to play, Bully. A lot of the bullies say the R slur too.
Well, Rockstar uses a lot of fucking slurs in their game, so
that was a T-rated game.
Rockstar pushes. Rockstar does that. Like that's kind of been their thing. They're very much edgy. Like,
I love their games, but they are very edgelord.
Yeah, they are.
Did you see people saying that about the Fear Street movies, too? It's like, it's not, I got an argument with someone about this, I think. Where it's like, it's not an authentic callback to films of the 90s and the 70s.
Unless they're using slurs.
Unless the characters are using slurs, and it's like, no, bro. It's.
Seriously? They use slurs in that movie?
No. In the Fear Street movies, they didn't. No, that was precisely the point. And this person was all like, oh, this is a bad, like, homage to 90s and 70s horror, which is what the Fear Street movies were, because the characters are supposed to be teenagers in the 90s and the 70s, and they aren't saying slurs every other line. And it's like, this is not actually a movie from the 90s or the 70s, though. So we actually can go ahead and not include that.
Yeah, because we have standards.
Also, like,
I know that the movies are R-rated, but also these are films that I think the target audience for is teenagers.
Yeah, 17. You're basically a teenager. You're still a teenager when you're 17 anyway, so yeah, you're totally right there.
Yeah. Sorry.
Plus, like that argument just doesn't make sense, because it's like, fucking... the Goonies like drop like swear words and stuff like that, but you don't see them saying anything offensive slurs, at least to my knowledge. I haven't seen the movie in years.
That movie doesn't.
Yeah, no.
No, it doesn't.
No, they don't. So
you know, Bill and Ted does.
Bill and Ted does.
Oh, yeah. Well.
It's an unfortunate, but you know what's why it won't make me mad when we talk, it's cool when you talk about that with Bill and Ted, is because, you know, if you brought that up to, like, Keanu Reeves or Alex Winter, they'd both be like, oh, yeah, man, that was shitty, we're sorry.
Oh, absolutely. Because
they're both cool people who take that kind of constructive criticism and are like, you're right, that hasn't aged great.
They also didn't write the script.
No, they're just actors. It's their job. They're cast to do that, and they sign a contract and they have to do it.
Right.
It just warms my heart how both Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves continue to not disappoint me. They keep being the decent white men.
Right.
Yeah. They're from what I've seen, they're very wholesome people, and I love them so.
Mm. I say that now. Watch, something terrible is gonna happen now.
Oh God, no!
Winter not long ago posted the Black Trans Lives Matter picture or something like that. So I thought that was super cool.
Yeah.
That's See pretty what I good. Mean? Yeah. For like a Hollywood, you know, like I'm used to them kind of, I don't know, it being kind of ignored by big stars like that. So it was nice to see. But I think, I think, Jazzy, I think you're right. If we're going to go back to Fast and Furious, that movie is definitely much a product of a time. And I think, it's not my least favorite movie in the series, but it's definitely like lower end, even though it is the first one. It's because I think the series gets amazing when it just decides not to care about realism.
Well, I'll be looking forward to that then, because, yeah, I'm probably not going to watch this first movie again. It was very... To wrap up my thoughts, because I've been going on about it, it's a boring movie with moments of greatness. And while I really like the third act, and it makes me really interested in checking out the sequels because the third act showed some good shit, this one just didn't do it for me. I gave it... If I were to give it on a score of 1 to 10, I think I'd give it a 4, honestly.
Yeah. I'd probably do it a little higher. I'd probably give it like a 6. But hey, that's me.
Yeah.
So just before you go into the next, be prepared to not see Vin Diesel for 2 movies.
I'm aware. Like, okay.
I'm glad you know that.
Yeah, I'm aware that. Wait, for the first bunch of movies, they're constantly shifting the cast around. So.
Well, the second film stars Paul Walker and Tyrese Gibson.
Yes.
And, Ludacris.
I know that.
And the third one's Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, so I knew that, but like I didn't realize that Vin Diesel straight up wasn't in the second movie.
No, he's not in the second movie at all.
Right, and none of them are in the third. So.
Yeah, but didn't the cast, the characters from the third one, eventually get later movies?
Yes, because. All right, so a little explanation, and I won't spoil anything, but 5 and 6 take place before Tokyo Drift.
I'm not gonna ask.
5 and 6 take place before Tokyo Drift, even though the cars are dated and technology. What, you can't think about an actual timeline with
Oh boy, it's gonna be a Saw situation where I'm watching each movie and I'm going, what time is it?
I don't want to spoil anything, so I won't say anything. But there's a specific reason why 5 and 6 take place before Tokyo Drift. There's a specific reason, and I don't want to spoil.
Okay, I'm excited though. I can't wait. I'm hoping this is something like Saw, where the timeline just gets so mangled that it becomes a joy just seeing what shit they pull out.
I will say post when it catches up to Tokyo Drift, it's more straightforward in terms of timeline. But
gotcha.
It needed to go back to it. I don't know why they chose it, but I'm glad they did, because there's a certain thing that happens that's kind of been retconned.
Chris, you just made me more excited for the rest of the movies. I love timeline shit shows.
Yeah, it's really weird, but I'm honestly, I love this franchise. It's incredibly loud. It's incredibly stupid, and it just decides it knows exactly what it wants to be, and it's wholesome about it. Like,
well,
I walk away from these films, the sequels and stuff, with a better mood, because they commit to having the biggest heart in most action movies, and they also commit to the stupidest stunts they can try and pull off.
I'll look forward to watching this next movie, Too Fast, Too Furious, which I'll say right now is probably one of the best fucking sequel titles I've ever heard of. Like, that's an awesome, that's objectively an awesome title.
I will say it's closer to where the series ends up than Tokyo Drift.
Okay, so this might be a good litmus test for me to see if maybe these films will start to become more my thing.
I think I don't like 2 as much as 1, though. So we'll see how you feel.
I mean, if it just gives me, even if it gives me something that I find stupid but entertaining on a brainless level, I'll consider it a better experience than one. So
then you're gonna be introduced to Ludacris.
Yes. Fucking me, yes. Bitch.
In that era, by the way, Ludacris from that era.
Yeah.
Move, bitch. Move. Yes.
So, and Ludacris is still a constant in the series. So.
Oh, this is good.
All right.
You're talking to a fan, so.
But yeah, looking forward to the next one, and I can't wait to talk about it next week.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you almost, so like, I think, yeah, the, so the fans chose you to see the Fast and Furious, but I am actually surprised considering that we had Twilight as the other option.
Okay, oh, we're segueing. No, yeah. segue.
Yes, that was my attempt at a segue.
I don't do these subtle segues. I shout that I'm segueing. Look forward to that when I ever I finally finish my Scream video essays. I literally have multiple jokes throughout it that it's just like, I didn't have a segue. Now I'm going to start talking about this.
Yeah, just anyway. Yeah. So just like when you have to like transition in a moment of night, you just go, nighttime! And just go there.
Fucking Scream was per nighttime!
On stage, it's a play. We didn't have time to paint a background. It's night now.
Larry was a lazy piece of shit and he didn't paint it. Fucking Larry.
God damn it, Larry.
I think we need to send Lizzie an actual segue now. If we're going to be literal.
Yeah, well, it's coming out of your wallet. I can't pay for that shit.
We'll just borrow anyway. Weird else.
And I'm a cheap bastard, so that's my thing.
Anyway, me and my girlfriend this past week marathoned the Twilight movies because they're all on Netflix now and we had the time. And for the context of, I was obsessed with Twilight when I was like, you know, 10, 11, 12, when I was the age range for it, when it was coming out. When the movies were coming out, at least. By the time I got into it, all the books were already released. However, I'm also the first person to complain about the misogyny just rampant in that franchise and the racism, because there is so much of it, and not at all subtle ways. Was very heartbroken to find out recently that Taylor Lautner is white. Taylor Lautner is a white man with an aggressive tan. He is not native at all.
Fun.
I know. Fun. It's just a
whitewashing.
It's not
of
a
the
good
late
franchise.
20,
I know, right?
Of
we
late
love
2000s.
Love to see it. Love to see it. The movies are not very well made. The first one especially, which is just a sepia nightmare.
Like, yeah, I've seen,
Catherine Hardwicke has this weird obsession with Dutch angles in scenes that are supposed to be romantic. It just becomes really off-putting.
Yeah, it's so weird, because I have seen certain bits of the first movie, like, in some shots. That movie is drenched in fucking blue, I swear to God.
Yes.
It is.
It is.
Oh boy, is that what like a color oversaturation looks like?
Like, yes. You know how a lot of Snyder films are brown? Twilight is blue in the same way.
God, oh, that pisses me off. Like, just like from a color palette point of view, just because it looks so boring when they do that. Sorry.
Yep.
It's not good, but it would work better if they were doing a Wizard of Oz thing and there was and they adjusted it based on like where Bella is in the story and her emotional resonance with her love interest and shit, but they don't. It just looks like that the whole time.
I was gonna say, there is clever use of color palettes in other movies, like Pan's Labyrinth is another movie where there's entire scenes drenched in blue, but there's a point.
But that's, yeah, there's an artistic point to that, an emotional, yeah. Communicating something emotional about the story and the character.
Right. Like, there's, like, a lot of the scenes in the real world are blue, while, and that's kind of the color motif of those scenes, while the scenes in the fantasy world are drenched in red.
Or another good example I just thought of, Joker, like, when you see Arthur Fleck and all that stuff, like, when he's just, like, you know, walking through the city and shit, it's, like, all these, like, very boring, like, depressing yellow colors and stuff, but as, like, the movie becomes more and more progressively, like, just fucked up, and the Joker becomes more prevalent, more color starts to show up, and it just becomes more brighter, because it's just like he has a new worldview and stuff like that. So there's that.
Now, something there's so much to say. There's so much to say about Twilight. I would like to start with first a plug, if we're going to talk about this. The Quileute tribe, which is the actual Native American tribe adjacent to Forks, Washington, that Stephanie Meyer based the werewolves on, is a real Native American tribe. They're currently trying to raise money to move their schools to higher ground because due to climate change, they're at tsunami risk.
Oh.
Oh, God. So please look that, and if anybody can, I encourage people to look that up and donate money, because despite the fact that Stephanie Meyer has made millions upon millions of dollars appropriating their culture and legends for her dumb vampire fairy tale, she's donated no money to them. So just gonna push that out there. If anybody's able to go and help with that, please do.
Yes, that's a good cause. Do it.
I don't know. I always feel the need to, like, mention that if I'm going to start sitting here profiting and talking about Twilight.
Of course.
It's just kind of insidious in its own way. But starting point. The first Twilight movie is not good, but it's fun, and it's iconic in its own ways. And I'll be an ardent defender of the baseball scene my entire life. I find that scene to be really fun. The whole franchise has a fun soundtrack. There's good choices. It gave work to a lot of great actors. None of those actors gave any of their best performances in this film.
Oh, no.
But, like, Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart, at this point, like, I think everybody who has any sort of critical thinking skills at this point recognizes them both as extremely talented actors who have done a lot of great work since Twilight. Like,
yeah, 100%.
Totally.
They really took that career boost and did worthwhile things with it.
I mean, Robert Pattinson's gonna be Batman, so that's a big fucking career move, no matter who you are.
One of my favorite things too is that Kristen Stewart is super fucking gay now.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, no, Kristen
is an icon. You know, I saw the Charlie's Angels remake, and while I don't think it's a great movie by any stretch of the imagination, at least Kristen Stewart looked like she was having fun on the set of that movie. Like, that's what I felt. So it felt like she was, like, you know, I don't know. Like, Twilight, she feels like she's just trying to hit the marks, you know, to do what's just bare necessary for the film. Yeah. And I'm not saying that's necessarily her fault.
Having read the books, I really want to give Kristen Stewart some credit to the films and that she's playing the character from the books. The problem is Bella Swan has no character.
Right. I would just bring it up because I'd like to see her have a little bit more fun with a role. You know?
Of course, for sure. But this is me reflecting on Twilight, having just rewatched them all, right? And I guess I feel that the actors in this movie are working with such bad material that doesn't reach its full potential. I honestly think Twilight, the comparison when I cared a lot more about Harry Potter used to bother me, but I honestly feel like J.K. Rowling and Stephanie Meyer suffer from extremely similar failures as writers, in the capacity that you've got this fascinating world building that you do so clunkily, and you'll just throw in these great and fascinating ideas and then walk away from them. And you focus on the least interesting part of your universe. Hmm. Because Stephanie Meyer, like, the side character, and anybody who's involved at all in any sort of Twilight fandom, of which I recently have gotten more involved in, is aware of this. The side characters in Twilight are so beloved. People love Alice and Rosalie and Emmett and Jasper, like all the Cullens, people love them and people want more material from them. And it's funny because they get so little development until like the third book. And then in the movies, it's even slimmer.
Oh my.
I'm sorry, guys, I've got a cough. But it's like Rosalie is one of the vampire sisters in the Cullen clan, right? Rosalie's backstory is that she was like a socialite in the 30s who was turned into a vampire after she was gang raped and left for dead. And then as a newborn vampire, she gets her vengeance by going on a killing spree against her rapists.
That sounds like a much better movie.
I want that book. I want that movie. I want I Spit on Your Grave with a vampire in the 1930s. Are you kidding me?
This sounds like such a much better movie than what's actually...
Doesn't it?
Like,
wait until you hear Alice's backstory.
Oh, boy. I'll probably be getting to those films soon enough for, like, one of these...
Well, they cut Alice's backstory from the movies, which makes me so angry. Alice was
a mental
patient.
Fuck.
Yeah. Alice was a mental patient in the 1920s in an asylum where her father locked her away because she knew that her father had murdered her mother.
Oh, geez.
And then she was changed in the asylum because she was a victim of electroshock therapy in the asylum. She lost all of her memories. And when she was changed into a vampire, she had no memory of her human life.
Oh, fuck.
And it's like, isn't this so much more interesting?
This all sounds way... At the very least, they sound like potentially good ideas for a story.
Right? Like, it's so interesting. It's so much more interesting. And she sets up all this fascinating world building and then doesn't touch it, doesn't talk about it.
It kind of reminds me, like, it reminds me of another young adult series that I did read and watch the movies of, Hunger Games. I have the exact same problem with those, like, where the side characters are so much more interesting than the ones we're focusing on.
Yeah.
It's...
God. I think...
It's frustrating.
I think that seems like a common thing among these sort of bigger... seemingly bigger narrative sort of either book series or adaptations of book series, right?
Yeah.
It's where, like, well, it's even
where
like
the main characters are the least interesting thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I find, and I think I'm going to tie it back to our conversations related to Vin Diesel.
It all comes back to Vin Diesel.
I'm going to bring up the point about that I think his best role that I've seen him in outside of his voice work was in Pitch Black, which is the start of the Riddick series of films. And I think that, interestingly enough, had the opposite problem of what you're explaining. So I like those movies, but the by far the weakest entry in the Riddick trilogy is the second film, The Chronicles of Riddick, which attempted to broaden the universe and explore the more nuanced, like what race of person he is, what his bloodline is, what the royalty of the universe is. And that film is the least interesting compared to Pitch Black and Riddick, which are intentionally small production, like R-rated horror sci-fi films where it's just Riddick and a group of other people surviving against monsters on a small planet. Like, those two films do significantly better as films than the middle film, which attempts to be this weird sci-fi fantasy bridge. So I just wanted to say that I think it's fascinating how you're saying that Twilight has the issue where it's focusing on the wrong thing. And I almost feel like that Riddick series has kind of a little bit of like an opposite problem where its start point and its character that it's focusing on is the most fascinating part about it. And focusing narrowly on that is...
I do absolutely. And I would say part of the reason, like, Twilight I think is the worst for this. But I would say the reason this is a thing that plagues a lot of YA fiction fantasy stuff like Harry Potter and Twilight and Hunger Games and the Divergent series and that, this, I find that this plagues that specifically so much because the writers are specifically writing these stories for like teen young kids, and they want the main characters to be relatable, so they're purposefully writing them that way, right?
To but, like, be they're like doing so. They're doing so in a way that makes them feel blank. So
well, exactly. That's what I think. I think that to an extent, it's intentional. Is you're writing these blank slate main characters so that kids can see themselves into the narrative more easily. It's, and I think that's also why these franchises spark as much fan fiction as they do.
Well, yeah, because you can write your person. You could easily overwrite Bella with your own personality, and it'd be fine. So.
You mean 50 Shades of Grey?
Google, did you mean 50 Shades of Grey, Jazzy?
I'm going to say this real quick. Anna in 50 Shades of Grey has more personality than Bella in Twilight. I'm just going to throw that out there as a person who has consumed both franchises.
I will probably never watch the 50 Shades trilogy, not even as a thing for this podcast. So that is where I'm drawing the line. However, standards, believe it or not.
I also have another very specific gripe with Twilight as a franchise, and my girlfriend listened to me go on this rant already, and this might not make sense to people who haven't read the books and or seen the movies. This might not make a lot of sense.
Oh, I'm excited.
But all right. In the first three books, there's a sense of the vampires being this very abomination against God, otherworldly thing that aren't supposed to exist. And at the, like, everyone knows the love triangle between Bella, Jacob, and Edward. Everyone knows that. There's this bit at the end of Eclipse, which is the third book, where Bella has this internal monologue about how she sees the future she was meant to have with Jacob. He was her soulmate, and I can see it now in my head, where we would grow old and have kids, and that was natural, and that's what was meant to be. If not for the fact that something so powerful that wasn't meant to be here hadn't stepped in, which is to say that she loves Edward so much more than Jacob, but that wasn't what was meant to happen. Like, he's an interruption to the natural flow of time and history. And that's why their love is so powerful. It's because they're these people who exist out of time and out of where they are meant to, quote unquote, be. And that tracks thematically with a lot of other things that are happening in the story. Like, Alice is a character who can see the future, and it's established that she did not see Bella in Edward's future until the day that they met. So it's a crossing of the paths that wasn't supposed to happen kind of thing. And so that was my understanding of this story. And I thought that was such an interesting thematic thing to have in your love story. And then the fourth book comes in and ruins that entirely with goddamn renegade rigatoni creepy ass baby.
That's one thing I do know about the movies is that the CGI on the baby is fucking horrendous. So.
Yeah, the horrifying baby. Which, if you want to talk about, I will get into my other big problem with Renesmee, and that is the only time I'm going to say her actual name. I'll get into my problems with her as a character in a minute, but they have Jacob do the horrifying imprinting on a baby thing, which is so creepy. It's so creepy and so weird. And have this established that the reason Jacob was so attracted to Bella was because Renegade was always there.
Wait. So did he fall for one of the eggs that just needed the sperm?
That's what's alluded to. He's like, it was her. It was always her.
What?
I'm not in love with you anymore because it was always, like, it's so weird.
What the fuck? Hold on, I'm gonna be right back. I need to leave. I just need to go. Why did you bring me here?
Lizzie, you broke Jazzy.
I broke Jazzy. And then later in the story, one of the main antagonists of the franchise says to Bella, immortality becomes you. It's like you were born to be one of us. It's like, okay, just ruin the entire interesting thematic resonance you had in your entire franchise.
I'm back.
about how she wasn't meant to be, about how this isn't what the timeline was meant to be, and how this is a disturbance of time and space with the power of love and whatever. Like, you just, you ruined it. You ruined the entire thematic resonance of your romance with this weird shit at the end of your story. Mm. And it's terrible.
I'm sure there's a lot of complicated issues involved with this particular writing decision, but I'm just more shocked and appalled that apparently Jacob was in love with the unborn child?
Yeah!
What kind of outline was written for this? Like, do they just not even...
None, I assume.
Okay, here is the backstory I'm going to give, because this is one a lot of people actually don't know. When Stephenie Meyer first wrote Twilight, and this, people do kind of know this, it wasn't originally meant to be published. And her initial outline for the story always included resentment. It always included, like, that, and Jacob falling in love with the child. That was kind of always there. It was slightly, and I emphasize that, slightly less weird before, because in the original outline of this whole story, there was no love triangle. Bella and Jacob did not fall in love. That was a thing that she never, and even in the original draft of New Moon, that wasn't a plot point. The publishing house made her add it. And that's the thing a lot of people don't realize. But that's also kind of why it's kind of one of the worst love triangles in the history of love triangles in literature, because it's obvious from the beginning that she's not going to pick Jacob and never was. So it's like a false tension that's always really painfully forced, because it's really obvious she isn't going to pick Jacob, because Stephanie never was into that romance at all as a writer.
Right.
But anyways, yeah, that's the backstory to that.
I'm just... I'm in for a shit show whenever I look at these movies for this podcast, aren't I?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you are.
I'm scared.
Yeah, The Gals fandom was being nice to you.
Yeah, if Twilight won over Fast and Furious and I came into this podcast talking about Twilight and then heard you talk about all this other shit, I would be shitting myself right now. I'd be terrified.
And listen, another big problem with the films is that they split the fourth book into two movies because they were copying Harry Potter.
Right, I'm aware of that, which is a, like, stupid thing to do.
Which was a stupid thing to do. That, here's the thing, that worked for Harry Potter because they made good story shifts and choices. It does not work with Breaking Dawn, because Breaking Dawn is a badly paced final book with a really horribly stretched out final act.
You mean Breaking Dawn?
Yeah, I mean Breaking Dawn. Yeah, I'm sorry, Breaking Dawn. And Breaking Dawn. They did that with Breaking Dawn. It's a terrible idea. Because what happens is all of the plot happens in the first part of Breaking Dawn. All of it. And then Breaking Dawn Part 2 is the entire first half of the movie is nothing. Nothing happens. Absolutely nothing happens. Bella's a vampire, their weird monster baby that has no personality and doesn't talk.
So I saw, running the first around two.
Being creepy.
I'm with you here that I saw the first two, like, you know, Twilight and New Moon, and then I didn't see anything, and I saw Breaking Dawn Part 2. And I'm with you there that it doesn't, what the fuck was it?
I've heard the opposite, oddly enough. I heard part one's the one where nothing happens, and part two is where all the story is.
And all of the story is in part one. All of the
story. I guess I'm in for a shit experience either way whenever this happens, but...
Oh, yeah.
At the butt end of
part two, they suddenly introduce, like, 30 new characters that we're supposed to care about, even though we've only known all of them for a few minutes. And even with that, they're still all more interesting than Bella and Edward, every single one of them. You've got these, like, Amazon warrior women vampires. You've got this one, like, rock star who fought in the American Revolution. You've got these Irish vampires who apparently were, like, rebels during the Troubles and shit. Like, it's so much more interesting.
I will say, I'm looking forward to that whenever that does happen, just because I want to make the joke that from what I know of Breaking Dawn Part 2, One of the characters is Rami Malek, so I'm going to make a joke about how Freddie Mercury is basically the fucking Avatar, because that seems to be his thing.
A pre-famous Rami Malek, he's fun. So you've got this. And then the movie made the smart decision to add a fight scene to the end of the movie, which isn't there at the end of the
Right. I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that. That, like... But
it's just, it's so terribly paced. And the biggest problem, and people are going to maybe disagree with me when I say this is the biggest problem, but it is for me, because I can forgive your bad pacing and your non-story or whatever if I like your characters. That tends to be the most important thing to me about how I connect to stories and film is, do I like your character? Am I engaged in the emotional core of what's happening? I'll forgive a lot of bad filmmaking and a lot of bad plot if I am invested enough in the characterization that you've got. So the problem is all of the tension, as it were, at the end of part two revolves around and rests upon you giving a shit about Baby Renegade. And I don't, because she has no personality.
Okay, every time you call her Baby Renegade, the only thought I have in my head is like a baby version of Renegade Shepard from Mass Effect, which is the funniest shit ever.
Yeah, and it is true what you're saying, Lizzie, like about characters and stuff. There's one of my favorite mangaka of all time, Hirohiko Araki. He even says in his book, like, if you have strong characters, you'll be invincible. So it's like... Mm-hmm. Because like it really character-driven stories really are like super powerful in that regard. Because if things just happen in a story, who cares? But if you are there with the characters, if there's something to relate to, there's something to grab on there, and then you know you may want to guide them through the way, you know?
Right. And it's like I've seen a few movies and some shows where like the plot wasn't all that special, but the characterization was so solid that it more or less carried the whole thing. So,
well, and this is, I think, especially important in TV, that there are so many TV shows, Supernatural, that carry through seasons upon seasons upon seasons of terrible story because the audience is invested in the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And like, so I just think, to me, that's the most. And people are going to disagree about that, and that's fine. I just think that's the most important thing you can have in a story is characters that I can be invested in and care about.
There was an anime I watched back in the day called Air, which had a pretty fucking garbage story, but I kind of enjoyed it based on the fact that the characters were actually fairly well written, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I really wanted to like that show, too. It's like, you know.
Yeah, it's not a good show, I'll say that, but I do think I did enjoy watching it once. I probably won't watch the dub again based on a couple aspects, like not that the dub was bad, just something that unfortunately hasn't aged well.
Mm.
The fact that two actors play love interests and knowing the history between these two.
It makes
the dub honestly kind of impossible for me to go back to.
Yeah.
And it isn't even the dub's fault. It's not Funimation's fault on that one, so.
Yeah, I can at least go back and watch FMA again. That one, it's like, yeah, no, that one.
Yeah. Yeah, well, FMA was great, so.
I have a question that's kind of interesting in relation to what Lizzie was talking about. Do you feel like there's any like film or TV show where I know I agree with you that the character is really important, but is there any film or TV show you think works because the main character is a prop to put yourself into the situation?
That can work.
Hmm. Do you think of any examples? Like, I'm just curious because one I'm thinking about that I liked was Hardcore Henry. I actually like that movie. Oh,
but Hardcore
I don't know
Henry is built about precisely that around that concept.
And
that's what it's
one of the side characters. One of the side characters is a fascinating character, regardless. So,
right. Kai, what do you think? I'm curious on your answer to that. Actually,
the funny thing is, the character in it of himself is not a bad character at all. It's just in comparison to every other character around him, like, he seems boring by comparison. But like Mob from Mob Psycho 100 is a good example, because okay. Bob is a solid character, very good character, but like compared to like other people like Reagan, the physically active group that the Mob Psycho fans are cringing because I can't remember what they're called. The muscle guys, whatever. They're super cool. The Parasocial Club, all these other people, like, they're so over the top and over exaggerated and so like well developed that you love them. That in comparison, like, Mob doesn't seem like much, but again, like, that story still works because of how well written everything is, and how, like, even though the mangaka has definitely like struggles in as far as drawing goes, like, and I'm not one to talk, I'm still figuring out how to do that myself, but he's a solid writer and he understands how to work with characters and shit, and how to write very deep interpersonal relationships and just really tug at the heartstrings for like really happy moments and stuff, you know.
I'm trying to think, like, outside video games, which is probably the best medium where your main character can be a blank.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think like a movie or because like yeah, a lot of the best examples for me come from video games, because I think of stuff like Mass Effect, where Shepard's not that interesting of a character, but it works because you shape a lot of that character.
Yeah.
The character is yours to do with what you will, their morality, their entire backstory, even.
Which I guess connects back to my Hardcore Henry mention, because that's kind of like a video game.
Yeah, that was very much trying to emulate the feeling of something like a first-person shooter.
Yeah, sure. Very much so.
I guess, yeah, this is hard for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you were talking about it, I just was thinking about it in my mind, like, is there anything that really does work?
I definitely think it can. I don't want to say that you can't do that.
Right.
It's just very hard because like your main character is who you're going to spend most of the story and you want them to be engaging. Like, I hear whenever I'm watching a lot of media analysis on why something is a masterpiece, 9 times out of 10 they're going to bring up the main character. I was just earlier yesterday actually, I was watching Lady Emily's fantastic video essayist, by the way. I was watching her video on Berserk, specifically the adaptations, and
yeah,
a lot of that went into the main character of Guts. And as someone who, keep in mind, I've never read any of Berserk, and I may need to change that after that video because it looks fucking cool. But
rest in peace, Kintsamura.
Yeah, absolutely. But like, there was entire sections that dedicated to kind of the character, how this character kind of grows as the series goes on, how he doesn't start off the story as the best written character, but as you go on, you kind of understand him more and everything. Like, I feel like a good main character can hold your story together tremendously. And if you're going to try and do something where the main character is a blank slate and like not even unlikable, because you can focus on an unlikable main character and still make it work.
Yeah,
like Tarantino films do it plenty of times.
And being likable and being engaging are not the same thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah. Exactly.
There are plenty of properties I like where the main character is an unlikable dipshit.
Right. And
but on this subject, I think maybe this is part of what frustrates me whenever I hear, because I feel like, again, this is a problem that specifically has a tendency to plague female targeted like YA fiction, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe this is part of why I will get so irritated when like adult dudes try and talk about Mary Sue as a character critique. None of them know what that word means, and none of them like know how to talk about it as an issue.
Yeah.
Right. To them, a Mary Sue is just a woman they don't like.
Pretty much.
Well, yeah, at this point, that's all it means. You're right about that, 100%. Yeah. But, like, if you're calling Captain Marvel a Mary Sue, you don't know what that word means. You just don't.
No, that's...
Or did you not watch the fucking movie?
Yeah, no, that's not even, that's not even, I can't stand Captain Marvel, but that's not even my problem with them. That's not even my problem with that character. My problem with that character is that she's just not, I'm sure this is just like a production reason or whatever, but like she was not fully realized. She goes from either like a fucking bland wisecracker from 1 second to an emotionally unstable thing. They don't know what to pick with that character. And it's like, okay, it's fine to have an arc and it's fine to have an unstable character here and there and have layers. That's fine. But you need to like, where does your arc start? Where is your character right now? Who are they? Why do I care? And why are you telling me all this shit? I did not like that movie.
I didn't like it either. And it's in fact, like, I was watching Austin Lee Matthews, a voice actor, was doing a tier list stream recently when he was going over the MCU films. He listed Captain Marvel as easily the worst one. And he's like, am I going to get shit for this? And I just type, no, I don't fucking like that movie either.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the worst one. I do enjoy that movie, but I can understand your perspective on that.
No, yeah,
it's my favorite.
It's your favorite? Oh, no.
It's my favorite.
Oh, awesome. Sorry, I just love having opinions on this podcast that are completely vastly different. Because, like Jazzy and I had the discussion of Space Jam last week. And it's just,
yes, the deep artistic meaning of Space Jam, a new goddamn legacy, of course.
I'm not going to pretend that it's the best Marvel movie. It's just my favorite. And there's a lot of reasons for that. There's, in particular, just a personal emotional resonance. That movie came out the weekend of my 21st birthday, and my grandmother also died that weekend. So I was in a very complicated... This was 2 years ago. It's okay. But I was in a really complicated emotional place when I went to see it. And it was a movie that made me smile and laugh. And I was happy when I needed to be. So that made it it did a lot of good for my soul when I saw it.
I feel like our favorites of movies, or at least of the MCU, it does come down to personal connections and understandings and whatnot. Like, my favorite MCU film is Guardians of the Galaxy 1 because I think I've already talked about this, but I lost my dad to cancer. So the entire story of Peter Quill's dealing with his own mother's passing is kind of like, James Gunn really did a great job of making that feel real and bringing to light a lot of that feeling and grounding that. That's my personal connection to that, in addition to that movie being fucking hysterical.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I would definitely say the Guardians movies and probably Ragnarok are the best in the MCU.
Those are really solid ones.
Kai, what would you say your favorite is?
My favorite has changed, like, constantly, just because, like, I'm the most biased Spider-Man fan on the planet, and also I'm like the biggest Marvel shill ever. Like, if I ever like a movie unironically, I'm one of the people who will often like say, I think Incredible Hulk is a good movie, and I will die on that hill. Just saying that proudly.
No, you're right, though. You're right.
But my favorite, just in all, just like, and is like, it's gotta be like, and it's got to be like Avengers Endgame for me personally, just because it's just a culmination. It's a culmination of like all that buildup and all that stuff. Like, it's like originally Avengers was up there just because Avengers was like my favorite like cinema experience of all time, because like it was just this years of buildup. This had a live action crossover like this had never happened before, and just seeing how all the characters play off of each other was just super satisfying. It's like, yeah, like. Not getting into too much detail, Joss Whedon, I'm sure, is like, as a person, he sucks, but like the story writing here, I just fucking loved it. And then like the Russo brothers come in with Endgame and just like fucking just create these like amazing set pieces, like that shit where like towards that big climax where Cap is just like staring down this fucking army fucking coming towards him. I want that shit fucking printed, painted on my wall yesterday. And and just seeing all those emotional payoffs, especially like just towards the end, like fucking just I never get tired of watching it. And
the final act Endgame is incredible. It pays off everything that it sets up. It's satisfying. I love Endgame for that reason. Yeah. Because it gives everyone enough fan service, but like at the right moment.
Yeah.
You know? It's not like, only fan service.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. It doesn't feel super shallow in this case. I get why some movies do this, like where they just like, oh, see, get it? That's a reference. That's the thing that you were like, yeah, all right, fine, whatever. Like, I know that, I remember, like, watching, like, Suicide Squad would do that a bunch, and that movie pisses me off. Mainly just, like, it would say, oh, hey, see, get it? We did the thing for your comic, get it? Get it? That was the thing for the bands.
Promising.
Like, all right. The new one looks like it's blowing the older one out of the water completely, and I'm very optimistic to see how that one is. I really want
to
see how
giving
that
love to James Gunn. James Gunn, you know.
For real.
No, I was just gonna say the moment I found out James Gunn was directing the new Suicide Squad, which, you know, this was like 2 years ago when we found this out. But the moment I found it out, I was like, that is fucking perfect.
It is. It's,
yeah.
That is perfect. Yeah. That's what you should have done in the goddamn first place.
And I'm excited to see him do an R-rated movie again.
I have a soft spot for David Ayer's Suicide Squad. Not because it's good, but because I'm a Harley Quinn simp.
Fair.
I'm an eternal Harley Quinn simp.
Same.
But, so I have, like, the big fancy box set of that movie, actually. I like it for Birds of Prey and shit, just because I want to consume every Harley Quinn thing. And
I've got the Harley statue from Amazon. I've got the Harley statue that came with the Blu-ray.
But Kai, you were kind of making a point about how, like, you don't like about references in specific in relation to Endgame.
Good point.
Yeah, exactly. Like with Endgame, like it's sort of like there's like set. It's sort of like what Tarantino did with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where there's like setup. It's sort of like a Chekhov's gun, I guess. Like where they have setup and then they pay it off like later down the line, and it like rewards you. You don't need to see. I feel like you at least need to like know the other Avengers movies to at least understand context, like because it's part of that big series. But even then, it's like they know they have that Chekhov's gun there, like. Like they set up the thing with Thor's hammer Mjolnir being carried by Cap in Age of Ultron, and then they paid off immediately there, and that was a great moment. Like it still gets me super hyped whenever I see that hammer rise and just him grab it, like, and then Thor going, "I knew it." I get like the goosebumps all the time when I see that.
And then Age of Ultron also giving the tease about, you know, Cap saying Avengers Assemble and then paying that off and. Endgame. I also really like Evan's delivery of that line too. Like, I guess realistically it doesn't make sense where he would just quietly say assemble in that situation, but it works because
the performances were easily the best part of that movie for me personally.
Yeah. But that's also a little bit of a culmination of one of my favorite running plot plot holes in all the Avengers movies, which is that they're all acting like they have comms when they clearly don't. In their ears. And I've always found that funny. Not in a way that makes me that lessens the movie at all for me. It's just a bug in the filmmaking. Like no one thought to put comms in any of the actors' ears when they're supposed to be talking to each other.
So but yeah. Oh god. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I was also gonna mention while we were still talking about fantasy stuff and like grand set pieces, there were a couple things I saw earlier since this was like Geekdom or whatever. I figured like we could share like some things that we saw since everyone was sharing. I figured I'd share.
Real quick, my favorite MCU movie. I'll be quick about this actually. No problem. I just wanted to get mine thrown in there. My favorite MCU movie is. You mentioned Guardians. I'm gonna mention Guardians too. Guardians 2 is easily my favorite. It's probably the one Marvel film where I feel I can easily go back and rewatch it and still enjoy it just as much every time. Well, the one MCU film specifically, because I'm not the biggest MCU fan. I don't hate it. I don't particularly love it either. It's always been kind of a thing that I'll go and watch in theaters when a new one's out, but I'm not horribly invested in.
Are you opening your like fucking sniper rifle case? Like
fuck, I was hoping no one would hear it. No.
Oh god. I'm trying to be nice, I swear.
But yeah, no, like,
say you don't like Captain Marvel again, Jazzy. Tell me that again.
So okay, you, so I don't like Captain Marvel.
So what were you saying about the one of the best Father's Day movies ever?
Yeah, that's the thing. And that's why, that's one of the reasons I love it. On a filmmaking perspective, I think Guardians 2 is a fucking masterpiece. I think it's well written. The characters are amazing. It's well shot. Has one of my favorite MCU villains ever in the form of Ego. But more importantly, the reason why this film resonated with me, and this might be cheesy as fuck depending on how you look at it, I also have a stepfather. I am, like, I also, like, for reasons, was not as close to my biological father as I was my stepfather. And I didn't, dumbass I was as a kid growing up, I didn't fucking realize it until I was well into adulthood. And don't worry, my stepdad's not fucking dead. He's fine. He's alive and well.
Yeah.
But, like, I guess I didn't realize it till I was our, till, I didn't realize it till I was well into adulthood and was pretty close to moving out of the, pretty close to moving out of the house. So when I saw this movie, it kind of resonated with me on that level of, like, the line, the fucking line, he may have been your father, but he was not your daddy. That,
yeah.
That line breaks me every fucking time because, oh my God. I, like, just James, as some,
James Gunn using Michael Rooker. You know,
yeah,
like using him to his abilities,
to hit,
like
to hit a very specific feel of mine, like yeah. To hit this extremely specific chord in my heart.
Yeah,
it's like, and yeah, like I fucking love my stepfather, and I'm sad I didn't appreciate a lot of what he did for me growing up, and that we were kind of at each other's throats. But,
Well, I'm glad that you connected to a Guardians movie personally, kind of like I connected to the first one personally. But I didn't want to bring up Kai's point too much before we forget about it. So Kai, want to bring up?
Oh yeah. I was gonna say, like, since we were sharing like stuff that we were watching and all that stuff through the week or whatever. There are a couple things I saw. One I'll make really quick, just because I feel like I haven't finished it yet and I'm still watching it right now. And the other one I want to get into just because I feel like it's been getting too much flack and deserves more credit. But the first one is I've been watching Jujutsu Kaisen again in English. Solid dub, and it's honestly like, if you've seen, like, any, like, anime shows out there, like Yu Yu Hakusho, and some people compare it to Bleach or whatever, but it's basically, to sum up, it's basically this one dude, Yuji Itadori, is this, like, high school student or whatever who has, like, who's, like, super strong and shit, really good at sports and really good at running, was raised by his grandpa, and his grandpa, before he passes away, tells him, like, hey, like, you should help people, you're a strong kid, and then, like, he gets involved with curses, and when his high school friends are involved and all that stuff, he eats like this cursed finger, and then he becomes like the vessel of this demon king named Sukuna, and it's basically like yeah, Yu Yu Hakusho meets Yu-Gi-Oh in that case, where it's like a demon inside of him and stuff like that, and it's just like, it's super good character writing, very good fights and all that stuff, and MAPPA sure likes to flex those animation skills when they can. Definitely check it out when you can, especially the English dub. Adam MacArthur, Ant Yatko, KG Tang do fucking great jobs in that. Really good show. The other thing I wanted to talk about was the Masters of the Universe Revelation Netflix series, because...
Oh, the Kevin Smith one?
Yeah. When the first part came out, when it dropped... I noticed, like, I was worried going into it because I immediately saw a bunch of negative reviews for it. And, like, people were just saying, like, oh, this and that, blah, blah, blah. When I watched it, I can see what they were talking about. That said, though, I still think you should still stick with it because there is a very interesting character, there are interesting character dynamics in that after, even after that first episode happens. People were, like, really upset by what happened in that first episode, but again, there was a very pretty good narrative reason why they do that in the show, but I still think it's worth your time, and it's still well made. The animation's fucking incredible, the voice acting is top notch, and to even go off of that with this particular Masters of the Universe thing, I still think, you know, just people were like,
people are treating it like a bait and switch, and I'm like, guys, you just watched the first episode. There's still more to go. I will say this, though. The biggest criticism I have towards it is that 5 episodes is too fucking short. They needed at least maybe 8 or 10 to, like, fully flesh out some character arcs, because I still think that some of them are underdeveloped in some cases. They're likable, and some of them have solid arcs, but it's just, like, we need more time with them. But that's just me. Those are my two cents on that.
I have a question. As someone who's never seen any of the He-Man properties, like, if I watch it, will it all, like, make sense or not?
I'm kind of in that same boat. My only idea of it was maybe like the 2000s series, but even then I feel like you could still somewhat understand. You could somewhat understand what it is. It's just, you know, it's a different interpretation. It's a kind of a continuation of the 80s show, which I've never seen, but also it's sort of like its own reimagining and stuff like okay. that, but you know.
I just was curious because, like, I see it and then I saw actual, besides the internet chuds screaming about the show, I saw it got actual great reviews. So I was like, oh, this might be really interesting. And the cast is kind of like phenomenal. So,
yeah,
you know, I was just curious because, but I didn't want to like start something that I know I'd be like lost.
Yeah, and it's you know really I mean? Yeah, it's really hard to talk about without giving away what happens in episode one, but I'd rather not.
Okay.
So it's funny, like I wasn't entirely interested in seeing it when I saw the trailers and stuff because it just didn't look interesting to me, and I was sick and tired of the same chuds that would later hate it, like going on about how, oh yeah, this is the ultimate take that to fucking She-Ra, which they're still bitching about, and I was just
huh?
No.
No.
Even though Kevin Smith said that he legitimately respects what Noel Stevenson did with She-Ra.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I was just sick of, like, I knew the series would, like, if it went a certain direction, it was going to be used as kind of like, ha, take that, feminist, which I fucking hate.
Yeah.
But then I saw it apparently piss that same crowd off. So now I'm all in. It's like, okay, I got to see this.
Yeah, that's literally that's the criticism I keep hearing. I'm like, no, that has nothing to do with that. What you guys are writing your own narratives and shit, and you're trying to fucking, again, I can't spoil it, but fucking no, stop saying
this shit. People calling Kevin Smith a fake fan. It's like, fuck off.
Oh, that shit makes me so angry. I hate it when people fucking say that.
I do too. It's the worst.
That's like calling Rob Zombie a fake fan of the Munsters, which I know people are gonna do.
It's like fucking, here's why that shit strikes a personal chord with me. Like, just because, like, whenever I fucking, like, in my childhood or whatever, like, whenever I would share an opinion on something, like, in my high school or whatever, like, if I said I liked a certain Sonic game or whatever, like, I like Sonic Unleashed unironically. It's like one of my top three Sonic games.
Sonic Unleashed is fucking awesome. So.
Yeah. But so many people – sorry, that's my ringer. Forgot to turn that off.
No worries.
But, like, so many people fucking gave me so much shit for that. It's like, oh, you like the Werehog levels? Okay, whatever. Oh, you like that game? Yeah, okay, you fake fan. It's just like – and it's like it doesn't even open – it does not open a conversation at all. It's just a means of, like, making people feel socially inadequate just to put your, like, dominance over them. Like, oh, I like this thing, therefore this person is a loser. And then there's all, you got assholes that say like, oh, Sonic was never good, or like, oh, there's never anything like that. It's like, again, that's a whole other rabbit hole, but just, if you're discussing opinions, please don't fucking do that, because that's how worst. I tune you out. Do not do that, please.
It's the fucking worst. I hate the whole fake fan mentality just because you like something, like someone likes something that you don't. Like, I remember I got called, like, oh God, I could tell you horror stories about that kind of shit from the Ruby fandom back in the day. Good fucking God. Like, just because I liked a lesbian couple, like,
right.
Like, I liked a potential, like, woman, like WLW couple.
Yeah.
Like, and I still ship them to this day, and the more it looks canon, the more I laugh my fucking ass off.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, I got called a fake fan just because I liked the characters Blake and Yang as a couple, which, yeah. Like I said, still do, and fuck you, it's getting canon at this point, bitch.
Basically.
Yeah.
Like,
you
like all these.
You know the fastest way to get called a fake fan of something?
What?
Be a woman at a concert wearing the shirt for the band you're there to see.
Jesus.
Yeah. This is this old, like, and this is definitely dying because people are becoming more and more aware of how fucking stupid it sounds. But yeah, this is like a thing. It's like, if you're wearing the shirt to the band that you're there to see that's playing, you're a poser, or it's like, because it's too enthusiastic, right? You're trying to prove you're a fan. But, and it's so fucking annoying. Yeah, I am, because I like this fucking t-shirt and I'm here to see the band.
Oh my god. Shut the fuck up. Literally, that even reminds me of another thing. Like, I was listening to an episode of this podcast called the You Are Not So Smart podcast, and they were talking about selling out or something like that, and I was just, because I never understood the stigma behind it, and then I found out, oh, it's just hipsters being assholes. That's literally all it is. It's just saying, like, you make money from that, you're not a real artist if you make art that way, if you make money that way, you're not an artist at all. It's like, fucking gotta, that's the point of being an artist. You fucking practice for years to master your craft and make money at it. How the fuck does that make you not an artist? That makes no sense. Get the fuck out of here.
I just had a funny thought, like, with the whole fake fan thing. So recently I announced that I was cast in a yaoi visual novel, Camp Buddy.
Yeah.
Like, specifically the DLC Scoutmaster season. And I know it has a fan base, and this is the first time I've gotten cast in something that already has, like, kind of a fan base attached to it, which was like, which I didn't know when I auditioned, by the way. I was like, oh shit, this has a reputation.
Right.
I'm just kind of waiting for the day if I have something, like, if I have, like, a certain analytical opinion on it. I doubt I will, honestly, because I just probably won't. But I'm just imagining this hypothetical situation where I do, and someone calls me a fake fan, and I would just say, bitch, I voice in it!
Yeah.
Bitch, I voice in the game!
It was like that time someone looked at a picture of Natalie Portman wearing a Star Wars t-shirt, and they were like, I wonder if she's ever even seen the movies.
She was in them!
Are you kidding me?
Fucking idiot!
Who fucking cares? It's like, she wore, it's like, I bet she doesn't even watch them. Like, fucking, the ninja, they just ask! It's that simple!
I would ask if this happened to Daisy Ridley, but it probably has, unfortunately.
A girl actually, this was a TikTok I saw recently, of a girl musing on the idea that, so Kurt Cobain's daughter's like 28 now.
Mm-hmm.
And musing on the idea of, I wonder if she ever gets that, if she's ever walking around in a Nirvana t-shirt.
No, it's like,
and dude bros come up, and I'm like, oh, I guarantee you it does. I fucking guarantee you.
It's like, hey, guys, if you see someone who wears a shirt of your favorite thing, just say, hey, nice shirt. It's that simple.
I also like that thing.
It's great. Yeah, exactly. And then it's the simple interaction. Don't be a fucking douche about it. Don't be a douche about it.
Gatekeepers and fandoms are the fucking worst.
They are.
You remember that? Oh, God. I just remember another one. Oh, you remember that tweet about that one dude who with the Dragon Ball gift that say, hey, if you like Dragon Ball, this and that, then you aren't really into anime at all. You remember that shit?
Yeah, I do, actually. I remember something like that.
Ugh.
Like, it's so weird. Like, oh, God. I don't know if I ever told this story on this. I mentioned the Ruby fandom earlier. I remember on my one of my earliest interactions on Twitter was, I did it when I was getting into using the platform a bit. I remember talking about, like, some of the toxic bullshit within the fandom, and someone and I think this person's kind of infamous because for saying this, someone tried questioning whether or not I was a quote unquote true fan by asking me to name all of the Grimm, which if you're not Ruby savvy, the Grimm are basically the cannon fodder. They're the things that they fight.
Yeah.
And it's like, I literally said that. It's like, no, because honestly, I'm not as interested in specific names of the cannon fodder. My interest in the show lies in its actual characters. It's like, I can name a few that, like, were big special Grimm that they made sure to say the name of.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's another example that I saw, like, with that. But I saw this on TikTok with some, I think this girl worked at a comic shop, I believe, and she was wearing a
Oh yeah, I saw this.
Did you see that about the?
It was a red hood shirt
or jacket.
Yeah.
Or sweatshirt, I should say. And she was wearing that, and someone came up and was saying, "Hey, that's that's Batman Beyond," and she was like, "No, it's Red Hood." And she's like, oh, I can understand the confusion. The bat symbol is very similar looking. And the guy's like, no, that is definitely Batman Beyond.
Oh, my God.
And kept trying to argue with her about
this.
Who cares? And it's just like, she bought the fucking sweatshirt. I bet, like, does it not say who it is on the front of the sweatshirt if you buy it online? Like, what do these guys think? God.
What is the deal with, like, oh God, you just reminded me of another story I had a very awkward interaction I had with a comic shop person. So I'm not going to say the name of the clerk just because, one, that's kind of a shitty thing of me to do on my part. And two, just like, there's no real reason. I just don't, it's just not necessary. But anyway, like, before COVID, obviously, I went to this particular shop like monthly to buy Sonic comics, and occasionally I would buy a few other things over there because the IDW series kicks ass, and I'm also a Spider-Man fan, like I said before. And at one point, they asked me like why I don't buy like an Usagi Yojimbo thing or whatever, which is like a Ninja Turtles character that got his own spinoff. And I say, it's because I wanted to buy it off Amazon, like, when it's a volume. And then he's just, like, so, like, offended and disgusted. He goes, why? And I'm like, because, you know, it's I save money in that way. And, like, and then he just he basically just guilt trips me the entire time. He even, like, asked me, like, how much money are you spending on that thing? I'm like, I'm like, well, I spend this and that and whatever. And I get a number wrong because I'm just misremembering it because I'm sharing my dad's account on it. For Amazon Prime or whatever, and he's like, no, okay, see, that's a lie. It's actually this and that and this and that. I'm like, dude, I don't care, and I don't want to start anything. So, but after that, I'm just like, I just want to get out of here. I just buy the comic and I leave, and I was just so pissed because I'm like, what was the fucking point of that? There was no reason for that interaction to happen. It's like you're pissed off that people are not fucking buying comics in your store. They don't fucking guilt trip them. Sorry, that's...
I got a story similar to that. Not on the same level, but, like, still with guilt tripping involved.
Oh, Jesus.
Did I ever tell any of you my experience pre-ordering Persona fucking 5?
You've got to be fucking with me. All right, what's going on with this? Where's this going?
Okay, so, unlike a lot of pre-orders I do, which I do through, like, bigger shops, like, or websites or whatever, I pre-ordered the original Persona 5 when it came out at a small retro game store near my college that I was attending at the time. This was in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And basically, so I pre-ordered the game. I'm fucking ready for release date. I'm one of the biggest Persona fans you will probably meet. And I go there, they tell me, okay, it's pre-ordered, you'll get the game and whatever this edition comes with and so forth, like, the day it comes out. Okay, I wait until the day comes up. I'm attending my classes, and I'm honestly barely paying attention. I'm fucking excited. So, after my only class for that day is over, I leave the campus, head over, and I ask them, yeah, I'm here to pick up Persona 5, I pre-ordered it. And it turns out that they didn't have it, and they made a few calls, and they're like, oh no, the guy told you that the game would be out the day after release date. And I'm like, no, I was told it was the release date. And it's like, well, we don't have it. It'll have to be till tomorrow. And I said, okay, well then can I have my money back, please? So I can go to another store and get it, because I was promised it today and it's not here today, and I'd rather just get it today because tomorrow I'm a bit like I have more classes and I'm busy. And then it starts this whole thing. I'm kind of being guilted about like, oh, but like he worked so hard to get the game for you. And it's like, I'm sorry, but
it's your money. That's your money.
It's like, I'm sorry. It's like, but like we agreed to have it by today, and it's not here today. So they relented. They're gonna, like, guy's gonna come by and bring it over, and I can come and get it later in the evening. Whatever. So I agree. I head back to the college, kind of just hang out in my dorm for a bit. Wait for the scheduled time. Time hits. I get the call saying it's there. I head over. Once I get there, the guy was so guilt trippy about it. It's like saying that I was ungrateful for the fact that they got the game for me. And it's like, excuse me, I wasn't being ungrateful. I wasn't yelling. I was just asking, if it's not here, can I have my money back? That's all I was asking.
Yeah.
And the real kicker is that they took the control overlay it was supposed to come with. They took it.
Wow.
Yeah. It was supposed to come with a fucking control overlay for my PS4 controller, and they took it. I wasn't allowed to have it, even though I'm the one who paid $60 for it.
God damn. It's like, I don't get that. It's like fucking, it's my money. I can spend it however the fuck I want. I don't even have to be here at all.
Right? It's like, it's just so bizarre. It's like, you know, oh my god. And that store was kind of, like, the people who worked there weren't the nicest people, and they liked openly bitching about other game stores, so.
Yeah.
Bright side is, after all that misery, I ended up playing Persona 5, and it's one of my favorite games ever, so. I just wish I didn't have to go through bullshit to play it.
And I think the lesson we've learned is that as much as gatekeepers want to try and keep us out, or at least people who are assholes unnecessarily about the fandom, we will still enjoy the products that come out, regardless of what anybody else has to say. They can just eat shit for all I care.
You put a gate in my way, I fucking take a giant ass hammer, I smash that gate to pieces and say, fuck your gate.
Fuck the
this
gate.
This is my gate now.
Fuck your gate.
I just put it in front of my house. It's mine. It's like, sorry, gatekeepers, it's mine now.
It's
mine now, and I get property.
I think with that encouraging message of saying fuck it to gatekeepers, you know, this is our space now, I think this is a good time to wrap up this week's episode of the Galaxy Geekdom podcast. Kai, do you want to like maybe share like some plugs that you wanted to do, like, you know, like share what you do, where people can follow you and find you and all that good stuff?
Oh yeah, sure thing. I am very active on the Twitters, at KiriKaiDubs. That's basically Kirito and my name fused together, and Dubs there. That's how that comes together. I also have a YouTube channel called Nerdy KiriKai, where I do video essays about things that I like BoJack Horseman, voice actors, and all sorts of other things. And, you can also find me on Instagram, also at KiriKaiDubs. I have a TikTok that's just at KiriKai that I barely use, but you know, I just use it whenever I feel like it, and if you want to stay up to date, at KiriKaiDubs on Twitter is usually the best way to reach out on the socials. Yep.
Great. Definitely do that, people. Kai's great. So follow him. Jazzy, do you want to share your plug, says normal?
Similar to Kai, you can find me on Twitter at a lot, actually. I do post on there actually quite a bit, at Lady Jazzington. You can also find me on Twitch under the same name, though I am on a bit of a hiatus while I work out my work stuff, most because that's been getting in the way of me just streaming. I'll probably be back soon, though I'm not sure if I'm going to continue to play through the game I left off on, just because it's been a while. And you can also find me on YouTube under the name Jazzy Oliver. Please watch my non-Death Note material. I'd like my other stuff to get attention, please.
Yes, please do that. Lizzie?
I am Lizzie Lemondrop. You can find me at that, wherever I want you to, mainly Twitter and TikTok. As I always say, in my Twitter account, you can, on the bio on my Twitter account, you can see the link to my website where I write things. Feel free to please go read those. And then you can follow me on TikTok. Again, it's Lizzie Lemondrop. I had 90% shit posting. Sometimes I talk about movies, which in theory is what I'm supposed to do most of the time. So yeah, that's fun.
Go follow her and see all the TikToks. And I'm Crystal Williams. I am a writer. You can read my articles at Medium under Crystal Williams. You can also follow me on Twitter at CrystalWRex. And I, you know, that's about all I have. But go read my writing. I have fun doing that. And on Twitter, I am very active. So if you at me on Twitter, I will 99.99% chance of seeing it. So, but thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Galaxy Geek to Podcast. Thank you, Kai, for being with us and enjoying our little crazy, super queer, geeky show where we say fuck gatekeeping. But thank you. You've been an awesome guest.
Of course, no problem. I apologize for being the for not having much to say, but it was a pleasure and I had a fun time.
Don't apologize. We all loved hearing your perspective and your voice, and we'd love to have you back at some point. And thank you. And with that in mind, thank you for listening to the Galaxy Geek to Podcast, and we will see you next week. Bye, everybody.
Too Fast, Too Furious next week. Woo!
Move, bitch.